Summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there was another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. At IKEA, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, they have all of the essentials that you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Who doesn't love shopping at Target? Did you know the all-new Target Circle is the free and easy way to get the most deals at Target? And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day. But wait, there's more. Now you've got a new way to save with Target Circle 360. With unlimited same-day delivery, Target Circle 360 is the fastest way to get your order to your door or someone else's. Right now, sign up for Target Circle 360 for just $49 for your first year of membership. That's $50 off the regular price. Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details. Same day delivery is subject to terms, applies to orders over $35. For a 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in store or at target.com/circle card.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Scott Patterson, I Am All In Podcast. We are going to run a panel discussion that I had with Sean Gunn at the GalaxyCon convention in Raleigh, North Carolina, a little while ago. And hope you enjoy it.
More, more, more. I want to kiss you more.
All In with Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Gunn, Scott Patterson, the Gilmore Guys.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello, gentlemen. How has your weekend been so far?
Busy. We're busy. Good to be in Raleigh-Durham, that's for sure. It's been 41 years since I've been in Durham. I was a former Durham Bull. 1981, and it's nice to be back and see all these smiling faces.
Easy. That's cool. Yeah, I like being here. I was at a convention here five or six years ago. And haven't been back since, but it's wonderful. I just got in. I can't wait to explore the city a little more, but it's been great.
Awesome. We're happy to have you guys. So we're kind of get into it. We kind of have to. That's the whole point of this. Gilmore Girls, cult phenomenon that spans gender, age. It's like this show that just tapped into a vein that television, I think, almost didn't really expect. Did you guys know that right off the page? Did it come to you? Was it apparent?
Yeah, it was unusually, I don't refer to it as shticky. You know, Amy grew up with a father who was a stand-up comic, and she had all of these legends in her living room, Don Rickles and Dom DeLuise and all the leading comedians of the day. So, and it extends itself into Maisel,
where the character is, it's like, get over it already, Amy. Write a show about a stand-up comic that's a woman. And she did in Gilmore Girls, too, because Lorelai is basically a stand-up comic. And a lot of other people on the show, Sean being one of them, and one of the finest physical comedians that I've seen. And unsung, and that aggravates me, which is why I have a podcast. And here's a secret. I asked Sean to be my co-host, but he's so busy being a movie star, he can't do it. And God bless him. God bless him. But I think that's unique in any type of television endeavor where the lead character is just doing joke after joke after joke after joke after joke. And it kind of makes sense. You know, it's not too far afield. So I think that's the secret power of the show, amongst all the other obvious reasons. But to put it in a sort of a family drama of that kind of depth and power and meaning, and especially in a Daniel Palladino written episode, I'm finding a pattern where it's everything is light and funny and charming, and then at the end there's a heavy moment. And he really just rips your heart out with it. So I just think the writing is unusually powerful. But you get to enjoy this, all these great jokes. So I think that's the uniqueness of it.
Yeah, that's interesting calling Lorelai a stand-up. It's true. There's a large element of that. Scott was with the show from the very, very top, and I came in a little bit later. I was on the first episode after the pilot. And I didn't know anything about the show, and I had no idea whether it would be successful or not. I think if you asked me then, I probably would have guessed no. Partially just because I didn't quite see where it fit, you know? And it was like you can tell by when they were award nominations in the first year, it was up for comedy and then they changed it to drama or something like that. And it was like, oh, this show doesn't know exactly what it is, which I thought at the time might hurt it. But it turns out, and we've seen this in television, that audiences had much more of a taste for that than people knew. So that turned out to be actually one of the big strengths of the show, that it did both, that it really was, you know, as you were just talking about, it would be funny and then heavy, and it would kind of go back and forth. But I really, the thing is that, you know, great writing will always shine through. It'll always rise to the surface and make something really good, and the writing on the show is terrific. So looking back, I think me now would read it and say, oh, this is a surefire hit because the writing's great, and that's really all you need. It's been a hell of a ride.
When I just to elaborate a little bit, and I know we have other questions, but when I got on the set for the first time in Toronto, in Unionville, where we shot the pilot, I went a little bit early because I wanted to sort of check out Luke's Diner and what it was going to be all about and spend a little time in it. And Lauren and Alexis were sitting there rehearsing a scene in the diner. And the chemistry between them was so good and so easy and so free that I thought, boy, this might be something. You know. And then I remember having a conversation with Lauren. Amy would have a Christmas party every year at her house, this massive palatial estate. And I remember having a conversation with Lauren at that party. You know, what do you think? How long do you think it's going to go? And we both kind of agreed that it would go at least 5 years. So that was my gut reaction, that we're gonna get over 100 episodes. We're gonna get the cake. See, the executives come out of their suites and give you a cake if you get 100 episodes. You know, it's like, congratulations for your 100th episode. You know, because so few get to 100 episodes. And so our show amazingly paid for all of their duds that they lost money on. But very grateful to be a part of it. But yeah, I thought it would go about five.
I remember at the time that Will and Grace had gone 100 episodes, and all of the actors on the show got Mercedes to celebrate. Like that, the network gave them as a gift, gave them Mercedes. And I'm like, I wonder what we're gonna get. And I think I got an actual tote bag.
Oh, WB.
I mean, they just didn't have the budget, you know. God bless.
Not even a bracelet, like a cubic zirconium or something bracelet.
Get a picture of a car.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, it looks like we actually have a question. Let's go ahead and see what we have. What's your name?
Naomi.
Hi.
And I'm enjoying it for a second time watching this show with my daughter, who is 14, so it's a lot of fun for me. But to piggyback on what you were saying, the banter of the episode is fast-paced. How often... Oh, I started a line now. How many takes would it take to get through a typical scene?
It varied. We had to do a lot of takes because it was, first of all, we shot right next to an airport and often outside. We're right by Burbank Airport, which is funny. But also, you know, the pattern and the rhythm of the show is very specific, and everything had to be verbatim. And if it wasn't, we would do it again. In the moment, it feels, you know, when you're working really long hours and whatever, it can be like, damn it, really? You know? But when you see it in retrospect, it had to be that way. Like the show had to work the way that it worked. It's like a Rube Goldberg machine or something. Yes. Like that.
I was going to say it's a precision machine.
Yeah.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, and so sometimes it would take a lot. It would take a long time, but we generally knew our lines, so it was all right.
We had one director who will remain nameless, who was very good director, really knew where to put the camera, which is half the battle. We referred to that director as Takeity McTake, because we did so many takes with that director, and I think that Jess. Remember when I pushed Jess in the lake? Well, there's a walk and talk before that scene. We shot that 30 times.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. There's where your Mercedes went. You're spinning it all on tape.
there's a long walk through the fake snow in season one. That's like all these townspeople. It was probably the fourth episode I did, maybe fourth or fifth. And it was after midnight, and it was I think we did over 40 takes of that,
like this,
of that shot, and it was long and all the way through, and it was like, and that fake snow is not, that fake snow is like made of shredded paper.
Yeah.
Finely shredded paper, which you know, I hope I hope it didn't have any long-term health.
I have some.
Yeah, body. Right. Yeah, some padding.
Fake snow lung.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Love you both very much.
Love you back.
I would love to know what was the best and worst advice you got when you were starting out as an actor?
Best advice on it for TV acting is... stumble.
No.
Come in talking, which means know your lines cold. And the worst advice.
Hold that thought. I'll do best advice too, because I also can't think of worst advice yet. But I think for me the best advice is prepare your audition as though you've already gotten the job.
Yeah.
So that you're not. I think it's a very, very common mistake for actors to be like, just tell me what you want and I'll do that. And they think that it's up to somebody else to let them know how they're supposed to be playing a scene, when it's just, you got to just kind of decide and go for it. And then you're either right for it or you're not, generally.
Right, right. Take over the room. Flip the psychology. You got to understand something. If they're seeing us, you know, they're making offers to names, and they're not getting callbacks from their big powerful agents and they're pissed off and they don't want to see you. They're not interested in seeing you. There's 20 of me. There's 40 of me. They don't care. So you got to do something to get their attention, you know? And that actually, I actually did that and it worked. I got the job.
I believe it. I had an opening for a good line there, but no, he's right. It is. You have to, it's like, it's, there always has to be something that's going to single you out. Although what I was going to say is the funny thing is that a lot of that advice is obsolete now because nothing's in the room anymore. Right. No. Everything's on tape. Yeah. Everything is on tape. All your auditions are on tape.
I'm going to do that on tape.
That's funny. Just start your tape with, can I have a minute?
Well, you don't ask. You just, just turn your back on it. I should have done that with the Natalie Portman thing. I would have gotten it. Damn.
They're just watching the room like, is this the last known video of Scott Patterson? What's happening?
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, what's your name?
Hi, sorry. My name's Sophia. I think you both are really awesome, but my question's for Scott. With Jess, he was supposed to get a reboot for his own show. Were you in any part of that? Would you want to be in any part of that if he was able to get one? I know it was just rumored. This was like forever ago, but I think after season three, they were thinking about it when he was in California.
He did get his own show. They filmed a pilot. He did a pilot with Rob Estes.
Yeah.
And it didn't fly.
Right.
So they didn't get picked up.
So then where did it go? I wanted that.
Yes, Scott.
Let me look. It might be in my wallet.
Give Jack Warner a call, will you, Scott?
It's not in there. I don't know.
I wish it was. That would be really awesome. But yeah, no, Jess is a top-tier favorite, so that's why I was kind of like...
And it's a shame, not to interrupt you, but it's a shame because he's struggling so much now as an actor. He can't seem to find any work.
He looks like he's having fun, though, so that's what matters, right?
Right.
Hiking,
whatever happened to
whatever.
Him?
I don't know. Just poor Milo.
Yeah. A few other actors, too. What's the name of the woman who played Suki? Has she done anything?
Oh, God. Martina...
Something.
McConnelly? Molly McConnelly? Right. Who knows?
Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome.
Hey, I'm Robert. I really love Gilmore Girls. I watched it when I was younger. Watched it at least 3 times now, actually. So my question for Sean. As Kirk, what was your favorite role of doing his job? Like, what job was your favorite role?
You know, the interesting thing is, like in life, my favorite stuff was when I'm not working. So, like, I love the, you know, like all my favorite Kirk episodes are like the one where Kirk plays Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof, and the one where he's Jesus and the Festival of Living Art, and you know, like searching for the eggs and the. And I don't know if any of those are actual jobs, but I did really enjoy. Announcing the hockey game as a job, only because there's some, you know, egotistical part of my own psyche that believes that I would have been a really good sports announcer had I put my mind to it, and I got to sit down all day at work. So,
thank you.
First, I wanted to say thank you. I met you yesterday. I was in a totally different getup, so you might not recognize me.
Who did you point to?
Scott. Oh, hi. I was the mathematician. You were very nice.
Oh, yeah.
I think Gilmore Girls means a lot to a lot of people, so I really was grateful that you talked to me. And congrats on Terminal List. That was amazing.
Oh, thank you.
But my question is... what were the friendships that you formed on the show? It's a really long show. Imagine a lot of friendships. And what was it like forming those friendships? Any favorite memories?
I mean, my friendship with Sean is going on 22 years now, and it just keeps getting better and better. And better, you know?
That's true.
Yeah. And others, and, you know. It's...
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a part of us, you're going to, on some level... you're going to be sort of friendly with everybody forever. Like if you, it's like there are people I haven't seen in 10 years, but if I saw them, it'd be, oh my God. And you'd give them a hug and catch up and see what they're up to. But yeah, I'm friends with Scott and I'm friends with,
except with Sebastian Bach, I'd run the other way. he's like, ah, dude,
and I'm friends now with Amy and Dan in a way that I wasn't then, really. I think they scared me when I was a young actor, and now I think I know them a little better. John Cabrera, who played Brian, has been one of my closest friends since college, so that actually predates Gilmore Girls, and Keiko and I are good friends. Anyway, you know, I don't know. They're all great.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi. Sean, I love your pants. They're awesome.
Oh, thank you.
I just had a question about, I think there was some mixed reviews about the ending of Gilmore Girls, and I wanted to see what your thoughts were, if you liked the ending, if you wanted it to continue, or how you liked where it ended up.
Originally or in the after we did the...
she wants the Netflix.
A year in the life. Oh, for A Year in the Life, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
I don't like what they did to Rory.
Yeah.
I think
agreed.
I can I get a hallelujah?
Hallelujah! Yeah.
I think you respect Ed Herman. You give him half the first episode to mourn and to go through that process, and then you do 3.5 episodes of a huge wedding. And for me, it was a big missed opportunity to sort of introduce all of those machinations and shenanigans that would have occurred the run-up to the everybody behind schedule and screwing up and falling. I mean, it just would have been great.
Yeah.
And I think the fans really deserve something that was that on the nose, because Amy and Dan don't write things that are on the nose. They go big when you expect them to go small, and vice versa. So that's kind of the beauty of what they do, one of the aspects of what they do, that few people do. But I think in that situation, it was warranted because it was just so obvious what the fans wanted. And I just think that was a time you got to give the fans what they want, and maybe they will. I don't know, eventually. So those are my two main points.
Applause.
And I get a hallelujah. Thank you.
Hallelujah.
I can have a difficult time sometimes being sort of critical, you know, in the non-pejorative sense of the word, like really being able to sort of judge what when I'm in something like that, when I'm so close to it. I tend to know by the audience reaction, like if everybody hates it, it was probably a problem, you know. Game of Thrones, but if everyone likes it, it was a good decision, whether I thought so at the time or not. I don't know really. I know I always sort of felt like the original ending of the series when we were done in 2007 was so unsatisfying, partially because we weren't even sure it was ending. I mean, maybe, you know, it was like. It was like a half ending where we might do another something, but we might not. And so they kind of tried to leave it open-ended. Plus, Amy and Dan were gone by that point. And so there was something always unsatisfying about that. And I know that Amy ended it the way she wanted to end it originally. And I don't know. I never really questioned that too much. So I sort of feel like it was... I thought the episodes were good, so I don't know. I don't know what I would have done differently, but I always believe that's your opinion about that is better than mine is.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jessie. I think the real question on everyone's mind is the one I'm about to ask. Dean, Logan, Jess, which team are you on?
Don't care.
I was expecting Jess.
I am team Rory does not need a man to define her.
Oh, good answer.
Sean, I think you should run for office.
Yeah. Yeah, the non-diplomatic answer is.
But I would only rate them by how I actually... No, I don't know. Honestly, if I did have to choose, I was probably Team Logan.
I had Ted Rooney who played Maury, brilliantly played Maury. I had him on my podcast because I do a rewatch podcast, if you didn't know, on Gilmore. So so one of the questions that I am, you know, we kind of came up with, and they iHeart came up with was, you know, at the end it's called Rapid Fire, and I asked him a series of questions. Well, do you drink coffee? How many cups a day? Da, da, da. Are you Team Logan? So we got to that part of it, and I asked him about who he preferred to be the baby daddy, and Ted Rooney's reaction was the funniest thing I've ever seen. And he just goes, oh,
God, that's gross. Who cares? So, love Ted Rooney.
We're at Comic-Con, though, so you got to say the Wookiee is your choice. For the Remember, did she have a fling with a Wookiee?
Yes. She did.
Yeah. So, you know.
More gold from the episodes.
Hi, it's nice to meet you both. I have a question about the year in the life. So how did it feel like going back to the Warner Brothers studio? Did you feel like filming that four episodes like series was like, did you feel like you picked up where you left off? Was that chemistry still there between everyone? Or just how did you process that?
I thought it was great. The diner, Luke's diner specifically was really, it was like a 2.0 version of it. It was brighter, it was better. The floor was spongy because the sound department said, make a spongy floor. We're tired of the squeaks and the cracking and the stuff, wrecking the takes. And it was all just better. You know, one of the good things about Netflix, and it wasn't all good, but it was a lot of good. One of the good things about Netflix coming is they spent a lot of money on the production. The technology had changed over the years since we last were there filming. So in 9 years or whatever it was, I mean, the camera equipment, all aspects of how you make a film were vastly superior. So it was really exciting to come back. And yes, we did... I fell back into the flow of the acting with those actors pretty easily. Yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah, I felt the same way. It was nice to have a little more space to like to do what we wanted to do. It was like, you know, we had a little more time, which was really cool. I was definitely like, from a personal standpoint, I was nervous going back into it. I was like, I don't know if I'm like. I'm not sure where this lives in my brain. And it was really like the second take of the first day that I was like, oh, there's Kirk. He's right there. There's no, it was not difficult at all. It was like putting on a pair of slippers that you've owned forever, you know?
Thank you both.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi. So my mom and sister like watch Gilmore Girls like every day. It feels like. Anyway, I want to ask what your favorite cereal is. What's your favorite cereal? Come on, come on.
I like those the Quaker squares.
Life?
No, the Quaker ones, the Quaker oat squares, the little ones, the like.
I forget what they're called.
I gotta be honest with you, I'm not a cereal guy. No. I go right to the eggs. I'm an egg guy.
All right, thank you.
My favorite bourbon, you said? Probably.
Hey, I'm Brittany. My question is, so Gilmore Girls, I think for probably a lot of us, is our like anxiety show sometimes. My husband's like, my gosh, you're watching it again, you okay? So what would y'all's anxiety show be or movie if y'all have one that you go to feel comfortable?
If I want to like chill myself out?
Yeah.
Rick and Morty.
Yeah. Love that.
Recently it's been Seinfeld.
Okay. Very cool. Thank
it's
you.
It's just full of laughs.
Hi, I'm Caitlin. So my question is for Scott. So a lot of us are romantics here. So when you and Lauren had to figure out how to put the chemistry that you guys have been running around for, you know, seasons and put that into your episode where you finally define your relationship, how was that for you?
It's just there. There's no work put into that. That's just the two personalities coming together and something ignites, something happens. And you can't, it can't be manufactured. It just, it's either there or it's not. You know, one of the great lessons I learned from acting class in New York was we could always tell the guy and the girl that was doing the scene together that slept together. Because there was no tension in the scene and we were all like, you know, bored out of our minds. So I'm not really trying to imply anything here, gang, but if there's energy between people, that translates naturally, without any effort, that translates onto the screen. You know, that camera is a truth machine. You can't fool it.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hey, I'm Casey. What was the biggest acting challenge for you in either series, either comedic or dramatic, where you read the script and you're like, how am I going to do that?
I can say that I remember the one time that I bring it up as my favorite episode. So I can remember there was one time I went to Edward Herman, the great, great Edward Herman, and asked him for his advice. And it was for the episode, the Fiddler on the Roof episode, where Kirk is playing Tevye. And I'm like, I was like, I had this weird, I'm like, should I be bad at it? like the singing, like when I have to sing the song, should I do it poorly for comedy purposes or just do it as well as I can? And I'm not a great singer anyway, so it will be poor anyway. And like, this is not like a, it's like, it doesn't sound like much of a choice, Sean. Either you're bad at it or you're bad at it. But no, I couldn't really decide what the exact sort of right way to play that was. And Edward was like, just totally go for it. Just completely go for it. And he was absolutely right. So that sticks out.
My experience with that, your question is, it was, I don't know, I think the first episode back from, it was episode 2, season 1, at Warner Brothers, and it was 6 a.m., and Lauren and I were in the makeup trailer, and one of the PAs just dropped off a new scene hot off the presses, just, yeah, and you've been there, and it was 10 pages.
Oh, my God.
We're adding this. We're shooting, it's first up. And it was like, you know, Lauren is all black ink. It's just chunks of dialogue, and then Luke might go, huh? You know, well, I don't know. And then I had a couple of chunks, but she had chunk. The challenge for her is obvious. The challenge for me was not to screw up her chunks. So it's all timing, right? So that's the terror when you have little like, huh, and what? What's it say? You know, your timing can be off and it just messes up their flow. But we did it. We put our heads together and we did it and we went and nailed it. And so from that moment on, we knew we could just do it.
I got one more kind of funny one, which is that there's an episode where Kirk does the it's in the talent, is it talent show or something, where he does the evolution of man and he goes through and he does the whole thing. And I read that as, and remember, everything in the script is verbatim all the time, so every single thing is mapped out. But in that case, all it says is literally just that Kirk does a mime that is the evolution of man going from being a baby to death. That's all it said. And I was like, this is interesting. I wonder like what we're going to do here. And showing up and like going to rehearsals that morning for that scene we're going to shoot and talking. Dan Palladino was directing that episode and saying, okay, Dan, tell me, like, what are you thinking here? What do you got? And he's just like, I don't know, man. Just... He goes, just do what you do. He's like, just do your thing. It's like, yeah. Okay, well, I know. So now, for better or for worse, if you ever see that scene again, I guess that's my thing.
Thank you.
Hi. My question is, was there a cast member in particular that you knew shooting with them would take multiple takes or make you break character?
He would make me laugh a lot. And it was, sometimes it was really hard. And when he was in the hot dog suit, God, that was a tough scene. Cause yeah, it was just like, I think everybody in the scene was cracking up. Cause it was just such a bizarre visual, you know, right from the get go. So that was tough.
It really is. Honestly, I think it's the scenes with Scott, because we did the Kirk's on the first date and we're doing that and he's giving him advice and they start talking about Ducky and Pretty in Pink and I don't know. I just remember like those scenes when you're like, if you're cracking up over and over again, it gets dumb. It gets like performative, but like, you know, it's right when like the first time you hit the rhythm perfectly, you can't help but laugh, because it's like, oh, that's it. It's right there. Mm-hmm. And those are good feelings for sure.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. Gilmore Girls has an amazing main cast and then also has some really cool recurring characters, actors and guest stars. And actually, Rob Estes played Jess's estranged father, and then you went on his show, 90210, and played someone he was a surrogate father to, Matt Lanter's character's estranged father, which I thought was a cool switcheroo. My question is, if you could, through hair and makeup magic, play any of the recurring characters or guest stars that came on Gilmore Girls, who would you want to play?
I think you just blew their minds.
It's a me, a Mario.
That is a rare example of both a good question and one I have not gotten before.
Or what's your favorite bourbon?
It's Jameson.
Yeah, probably so.
Not Michael Winters, because he was too close to Luke. You know, he was kind of Lukey. I think Rory.
Okay.
Because she was so completely vulnerable and sweet, and she threw all of her lines away in such a way that it was almost instructive, because she had no acting experience, so she had... You know, she brought a very fresh approach to her work, and I always admired that—the simplicity but it was also very rich what she did, and she never pushed. You know, she just never pushed. So I think I would like to try that because it would be an interesting dynamic with Lauren. I don't want to be your boyfriend anymore. I want to be your daughter.
Speaking of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, there we go. Right.
I read too much ancient history.
Yeah. You know what? I would probably choose Paris. Because I feel pretty well suited for the character that I played. And Paris is probably the most lateral move from Kirk. She's more like a sort of female counterpart in her weirdness and how much anxiety she feels over tiny little things. And I think that would be a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sam. I have a question for Scott, but first I wanted to say, Sean, I absolutely love what you bring to the show. I feel like it just makes it. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that. But, Scott, I wanted to know specifically on the first kiss scene with Lorelai. How many takes did it take you to film that? And because it was so perfectly done between the two of you and the banter back and forth of, like, would you just stand still? And then would you just stand still? So how many takes did it take to do that?
Well, I purposely blew a lot of takes.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it awkward at all?
Honestly, it wasn't awkward, but we knew it was going to be a huge moment for us, maybe the biggest moment thus far, obviously, and we were both very nervous. Because we wanted to get it right. You know, we really, really wanted to get it right. Because if you screw that one up, there's no coming back from that. So and you could hear a pin drop on the set. And it was just, it was filled with energy, electricity, that scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you nailed it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Had a lot of practice.
Hi. I'm sure... You guys have gotten this question a lot before, but, well, first off, you've both watched the show full through, or?
I never watched the show, and I have a podcast now where I'm watching the show for the first time, and then we're breaking down the episodes. I never watch a show.
Okay.
So I made the sausage. I didn't want to eat it.
I mostly watched. I would say I watched the show in general, and I always watch my own stuff, which a lot of actors don't, but I'm like, I like want to break down what I did, and I'm a maniac that way.
So then, what, were you Team Luke or Team Christopher?
Luke. Luke.
That was my favorite reaction ever.
Yeah, I'm almost appalled that you even asked.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kellen. And just to piggyback off her a little bit, I watched with my mom and my brother who were wrongly Team Christopher while I was Team Luke. so people can just boo for them. But I have a very generic question. Did you take anything from set? And if so, what was it?
I took a great deal.
You deserved it.
I feel that I did. It was a negotiating tactic. I was going to hold it hostage for more money per episode, and it worked out, actually. It was a bridge midnight. There was an exchange, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I took the, you know, my chair, the back of my chair, if that's the only thing I ever take from. Do they let you take things from your work?
I'm an analyst, and I take, like, a lot of our office supplies.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, okay. Yeah, socks. That's my whole, like, that's about as bold as I get, I'll leave my old socks and take the new ones that wardrobe gave for me. That's about as far as I can go. Otherwise, I feel like I'm going to get in trouble.
Thank you both.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you have a lot of fun working with your daughter, Gigi, and the tug and pull when you were supposed to marry Lauren? What was that like? Were you upset that it took so long for you to marry her?
No, I think it contributed to building the tension for the show over those four seasons that it took. I don't think, you know, you give the audience what they think they want and then they don't come back. So you got to milk that. So that's good. That was a good thing. You know, I would have milked it for another couple of seasons. You know, yeah, why not, right? Gigi, was that my daughter's name in the show? Was Gigi?
Yes, I don't... the nickname.
So the question was, did I like having a daughter?
Yeah, I did know you like working with her?
Oh, God.
You looked like you had a lot of fun.
I loved her. She was such a pro, and she was so classy, and she was so smart.
Is
precocious.
She acting now?
I think she is. And her sister got a record deal as a teenager, like a 13-year-old with Warner Brothers Records, and made some albums. And, you know, it's a very talented family. I love her. And I know the fans had an odd reaction to her. They didn't, you know, like how Luke was and what it made him do and act like toward Lorelai and the withholding of it and all that. But I loved working with her. I thought it gave him another dimension, and I really liked it.
Her name was April.
April.
Oh, right.
So I'm going to stick with that answer. Sorry.
April, that's right. I was like, that is not ringing a bell.
I did pretty good, though, yeah. Didn't I? Yeah.
Hi, this question isn't really related to Gilmore Girls, but Sean Gunn, you play the physical embodiment of Rocket in the MCU. What's that like?
That's probably for another panel, but it's a very unusual job. It ended up being the next sort of, I don't know how to describe that. I'm a very physical actor. That's where I can make the segue from Gilmore Girls to doing Rocket, is that I've always been, I'm very limber and I use my body as expressively as I can, partially because I was born with such a strange body. And I've always loved doing physical comedy. And then when it came time to do Rocket, it was like to put me on the, I just got down on my hands and knees and started doing it from a crouch position. And now I've done six movies as Rocket, and it's a hell of a job.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, we got about five more minutes, so what we're going to try and do is see if we can't rapid fire through as many as we can. So I apologize if we can't get to your question, but if we don't, like I said, they have booths. You guys can come and get your answers personally there, okay? All right, let's start.
So this is actually for him, again, because he wanted to ask two questions. But as Kraglin, when you were playing in Thor Love and Thunder, you married a woman you just met. How's that going?
Good.
All right. Thank you for your question.
Hi, my name is Michelle, and this question's more for Scott, because Sean, you kind of already answered it. For the revival, you kind of gave it a thumbs down. What do you think they could have done differently?
Well, like I said, you know, honor Ed and his passing and all he meant to that show. Give it a half to a full episode, and then the other three or three and a half do a big wedding.
Will there be more?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't.
Thank you.
Okay.
So I've been watching the show since I was five, and it's really helped me grow. My question is, if the characters were cast to different actors, do you think the show would have gone differently, or do you think...
Oh, no, big failure. Huge failure. Just first episode canceled. Bye.
Hi, my name is Isabella. I kind of grew up watching you guys as well. My grandma has the biggest crush on you, like, on Scott. My question is, even, like, before filming Gilmore Girls, what was your first impressions on, like, what did you think, like, how it would go, if that makes sense?
As soon as I walked into the room and met Amy and Leslie Linka Glatter, who was directing the pilot, and Gavin Pallone, I felt like I had finally walked into the right room. Because when you walk into rooms a lot, and there used to be a designated pilot season back then where it was just a specific amount of time during the year where they'd cast pilots, you walk into a lot of rooms and you don't feel comfortable. and they're not the right people. So that just means it's a gut reaction. But with Amy and Gavin and Leslie, it was the right room.
Awesome.
So I knew it was, I kind of almost instinctively knew it was going to work out.
Yeah, Gilmore Girls, well, when I auditioned, I was auditioning for a one-day co-star role to play the DSL installer. My agent at the time wanted me to pass on the audition and not go because they thought, no, you're only doing guest stars now. You're not doing co-stars anymore. But my manager was friends with Mara Casey, one of the casting directors, and said, let's do this favor for Mara and go in and read the thing. And I'm still a struggling actor. I'm not too good for anything. Let me read the scene. If I like the scene, I'll go in and read. If I'm saying, you know, can I get you a cup of coffee and leaving, then I won't do it. And I read the scene. I'm like, oh, this is funny, and I understand this material. This is like old school comedy. This is like Preston Sturges. It's like, I know exactly how this should work. And it is one of the auditions that I went in and read and did the scene, and I just, it was right there. Like, when I walked out, I was like, you guys can go home. I just booked that role.
I was there when he came out of the room, and I went home.
That's great. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Amber, and I'm just wondering, what's the most awkward or hilarious fan interaction you've ever had? If you're legally allowed to share it.
There was somebody waiting. When I bought a house, finally, in 2003, I left my little rent-controlled studio apartment that was $550 a month for all, it included everything. And I wasn't leaving. But my accountant said, well, do you want to write this amount of money to the IRS, or do you want to own a house and get the deductions? I said, I'll buy a house. So I bought this house, and it had this breezeway. It was gated, it had a breezeway. It's very private. And coming home from work one night, there was a German girl who was asleep in my breezeway. And she'd found out, obviously, where I lived. And, you know, I woke her up, and I said, are you okay, and what's going on? And she started speaking to me. I mean, most Germans learn English growing up, so she spoke English. And she said, oh, Luke, 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 Luke. And I said, listen, I'm not going to call the police, and it's not, just don't do this. This is my private home. And then I said, but do you make schnitzel? Come on in. No. So she left, and, you know, that was probably the most awkward, strange encounter I've had so far. They're usually very, very pleasant encounters. They're all great, you know.
Thank you.
Mine is one of the first conventions I did after Guardians. I was with Michael Rooker and a young woman. I'm sorry. This young woman had Rooker and I sign her arm, and then she came back the next day and had our signatures tattooed on her arm.
Okay.
Did she have a German accent?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, there's no pressure, but this is unfortunately has to be our final question.
Oh, we can do it. Oh, we'll do them fast. We'll do them fast.
All right, real fast, real fast.
Real fast. Scott, yes. You've been able to play a lot of different roles, not only a romantic lead here on Gilmore Girls, but you've been a cop on the Saul series. You've had all these different roles, and somehow you've managed to not be typecast. And how in the world did you pull it off?
I don't know. I just play the role that I'm given, and I try to make it real.
The answer is talent. Next.
Okay.
We can do this.
Hi, guys. My name's Will. A question for both of you. What was it like working with Ed Herman and Kelly Bishop? Were they, like, very demanding or... especially when she was grilling Luke, what was that like?
Demanding? They're both geniuses. Seriously.
Yeah.
Is there anything else to say?
The first time I was working with Ed, I was nervous, and I don't get nervous. And it was like, I'm working with a legend today at a golf course, and it was really cool.
Yeah, it's great. All right, next.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Sammy. I My question is for both of you. I guess Gilmore Girls has always been a comfort show to me, which I think a couple of people have said, and I think one of the reasons it is such a comfort show for people is the sense of community because of the, like, large cast of consistent, like, smaller characters, I guess, that feels very much like a family. But that's kind of controversial in real life because people, like...
You're going to need to bring this around. Sammy.
So would you ever want to live in a small town like that where everyone actually, like, knows your business and involved in everything? Or would you actually hate to live somewhere like that in real life?
I would like it, actually. But the thing that appeals to me most is just, first of all, being able to walk everywhere and just knowing my neighbors. It doesn't mean I want them in my business, but, like, the sense that you have an extended family beyond your own home to the people that are in your vicinity is something that is appealing to me. Yeah, Scott agrees. Next.
Hey, fellas. My question, you already talked about the fact that you came in on that one episode, but you had another role before you finally ended up with Kirk. Yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
It really was just a matter of Amy forgot that she gave my character a name in that first episode, because in the script he was DSL installer, and so she thought, oh, this character doesn't have a name yet, and then a few episodes later, she had him introduce himself as Kirk.
But what about Swan Guy?
Right, it's the same thing. So Swan Guy, so it was DSL installer, and then it was Swan Delivery Guy, and then I did the episode where I was Kirk, and in Amy's mind, she just hadn't given the character a name yet, and then gave him the name of Kirk, not knowing that I'd introduced myself as Mick in the first episode. To me, I thought I'm, like, playing sort of the same character, but not exactly. Like, it's some weird, you know, like, interdimensional, like, multiverse thing or something like that. Like, I didn't know, and I was too afraid to ask, so I just, like, was like, okay, I'm just gonna roll with it. But you can see Kirk changes a little over the course of those first few episodes as I was kind of figuring it out. He doesn't really become really Kirk until about episode, like, three or four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Anyway.
Thank you very much. I don't think there's any more else to say. You definitely got your answers right here. They're definitely happy to see you. Thank you so much, Scott Patterson, Shotgun.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram at IAmAllInPodcast and email us at gilmore@iheartradio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, scottyp.com, scottyp.com, scottyp.com. Grade one specialty coffee.
Ah, summer. The best time of the year usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there was another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. At IKEA, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, they have all of the essentials that you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.